G-37, Stevenson Farm, Eastview, Colorado. Leaning for the moment on every ounce of his stealth training and extensive experience in private security more than on his earlier military days, Clark McCarthy arced around the extent of the beams of Phil Norris's porch lights until he was pressed up against the side of the house. Once there, he listened intently while remaining deathly silent. There were lights on inside the house, and he could see right through to the kitchen thanks to the fact that both Phil's hallway blinds and the internal door were open. There was nothing to suggest that any of this was unusual for Phil, a man with unusual habits and idiosyncrasies at the best of times, but Clark was immediately uneased by how still everything felt. He crouched under the window and continued to hug tightly to the building's exterior as he made his way towards the kitchen at the rear. With every step, Clark grew more and more certain that no intruder was present. Whether no intruder was present any longer, or no intruder had been present at all, wasn't yet certain, as there was troublingly little sign of Phil himself. "I told him to hang tight," Clark reminded himself. "Whether someone was here or not, Phil is probably hiding under a bed or something." Clark felt slightly more relaxed with this thought in mind, but the lack of noise from the house combined with the gentle sound of rustling corn to make it utterly impossible for Clark not to think back to some previous dramatic visits to this very farmhouse. This was no mere distraction, however, as doing so provided far more than an aimless trip down memory lane. Not every trip out to Eastview had been as pleasant as that on the night of Il Diavolo's Peregrine, when the once Earth-threatening comet had come as close as it would ever get to Earth after the messenger's intervention and had started getting further away. That Dan timed the moment of his marriage proposal to Emma to coincide perfectly with the Peregrine made for a perfect evening that no one lucky enough to have been there to see it would ever forget, and Clark hung on to this as the main positive memory he could think of. Phil had been there for that one, since the house was his by then, but he hadn't been around on any of the prior occasions that Clark was now calling upon to retain some perspective of what might be going on tonight. When the farmhouse had been owned by none other than IDA Supremo and unapologetic hoaxer extraordinaire Richard Walker, it had been a veritable hotspot of alien activity. Indeed, it had been the hotspot. The group's first experience of any direct alien-related activity came when Walker's assistant, Ben Gold, led them out to Eastview just minutes after he blew the lid off of Walker's hoax and just hours before committing suicide over the guilt of his own involvement. On that night, they had arrived expecting to find Walker inside, whether dead or alive, but instead discovered an empty bed and CCTV footage of Walker lying asleep until a then inexplicable flash masked his sudden disappearance. Dan was beckoned to the adjacent cornfield by the messengers shortly afterwards, as he was again a year later, but the house's ominous history didn't end there. When Walker had been set to spitefully admit everything about his hoax to a world which was absolutely unprepared to handle it, Clark himself had rushed to Eastview to stop him while he could, only to find that the messengers had beaten him to the punch in abducting Walker once more, that time doing so decisively and for good. Clark's collision with an invisible force field and the broken nose that resulted from it live particularly fresh in his memory, but the messenger's history at this site made him consider whether Phil had perhaps heard an intruder of a very different kind than he'd assumed to be sneaking around outside. Clark couldn't quite put his finger on how this could make sense, for with Sacco busy on New Kerguelen and Leisha just as occupied with Timo and Alessandro, the only two aliens Clark could bear to think about having intervened were effectively ruled out. Why any messenger would want to take Phil Norris, of all people, was another question Clark's mind couldn't tackle, as was the consideration of why they would be sneaking around outside rather than appearing in a flash, as had always been the case to date. Regardless of how little sense any of this seemed to make on the face of it, the continued silence and stillness in and around the house was starting to make Clark think that some form of extraterrestrial intervention probably was the likeliest explanation. Crouching now under a window at the cornfield facing side of the house, having crept all the way around the back without detecting a single sign of occupation, Clark made a decision to accelerate his search for an answer by doing something that would at least confirm whether or not anyone was still in the house. After picking up a large decorative rock from the ground, Clark held it in his left hand while he pulled the sleeve of his sweater over his right. He then took hold of the stone through the fabric, wisely protecting his arteries from the worst of the coming impact, and proceeded to smash the window with a single firm blow. He wanted to avoid throwing the rock in case it had collided with Phil, whether landing in some out-of-sight spot where he was hiding or hitting him as he happened to move into sight in a strike of ridiculously unfortunate timing.
"If they don't react to that, they're not there," Clark reasoned.
He listened carefully, taking just as much care around the jagged glass, and heard absolutely nothing.
"He's not there. Well, at least I know that much."
Having taken the action he'd been internally debating for a few moments, Clark paused to consider his next move. As he did, though, an unsettling thought suddenly entered his mind, that the only thing this total lack of reaction had really just proven was that Phil wasn't still alive in the house. As this thought rattled in his mind, the adrenaline of a suddenly realized fear carried Clark's feet hurriedly towards the front door of the house. With stealth having been thrown out of the window when a rock was smashed through it, the only desire in Clark's mind at that moment was proving the fear wrong. He stormed through the unlocked front door, surprising the onlooking Mr. Bird to no end, and rushed from room to room like a man possessed.
"Phil," he yelled. "Phil, are you here?"
Quite why he was calling, when the two chief possibilities in his conscious mind were that Phil was either dead in the house or had been taken somewhere else, was anything but clear. But Clark McCarthy wasn't exactly operating at the height of rationality. After clearing every room on the house's main level and finding not even so much as the faintest sign of a scuffle, Clark turned his attention to the basement Phil had recently installed at great cost, having fallen in love with Dan's during the security-focused renovation in which he played such a major and helpful part.
"So obvious,"
Clark thought, simultaneously cursing his foolishness for having brought so much unnecessary concern upon himself by missing this option and breathing a sigh of relief that it had presented itself. There was nowhere better for Phil to have opted to hang tight than in a basement, where he could perhaps even hide in the darkness and catch by surprise any intruder foolish enough to venture down there. Clark's relief turned to excitement for a brief moment as he considered the possibility that Phil was holding the intruder in the basement, having laid in wait until the opportunity presented itself. This would be perfect, presenting Clark, as it would, with the opportunity to find out what the man wanted and who he was working for. The electronic keypad next to the doorway down to the basement suggested that access was usually granted by a 6-digit code. Clark knew the 6-digit code for Phil's office at New Care Grillin and the same 6-digit code required to unlock his cell phone, both of which Phil had trusted to him in case of genuine emergencies, and so he had little doubt that the same code would be needed here. For the theory that the intruder could also be in the basement to hold any water, Clark considered that Phil must have strategically left the door unlocked after taking his hiding place. He shrugged this off, thinking it wasn't a point worth getting hung up on, since Phil was easily smart enough to think up and pull off a trap like that. Clark then did something he considered smart in his own right, in texting Mr. Bird to let him know that he was about to enter the basement using the code 501223. He knew that this action, which took only a few seconds, would prove very useful should he, for some reason, have any difficulty exiting the basement. Perhaps if it was empty after all, and if Phil had devised a security system which required two different codes, which Clark certainly wouldn't put past him, but he also told Bird to wait at least 10 minutes before coming in after him. A reply came immediately. "Okay, be careful." Clark appreciated that Mr. Bird hadn't tried to engage him in any deeper conversation, knowing that his friendly neighbor of 3.5 decades must have had a head full of questions, but clearly also recognized that there was no time for Clark to answer them in the urgency of the moment. After taking a particularly long gulp of air, Clark held his index finger out towards the keypad and entered the code he hoped and prayed would be correct. 501-223. Instantly, A small green LED flashed on the wall above the keypad, and the welcome sound of a hydraulic unlocking mechanism floated into Clark's ears. "It's Clark," he called, hoping and praying even harder than ever that Phil would call back. "Took you long enough," or "nice of you to show up," were the kinds of in-character replies he might have gone for if someone had asked him to guess what Phil would say, but as the seconds ticked on, the only thing Clark McCarthy could hear was his own ever-quickening and ever-loudening heartbeat. "Phil," he called even more loudly. Still no reply came. Clark used his phone's flashlight to guide his path down into the basement until he saw a light switch on the wall halfway down the stairs. An odd place for it, he thought, but Phil was Phil. Flicking the switch without hesitation, Clark gulped and readied himself for whatever he might find. The answer, as he had frustratingly come to expect, was a whole lot of nothing. Aside from the huge freezer Phil used for preserving game, all Clark saw was a long computer desk and a storage unit composed of 16 cube-like compartments. "This is it?" Clark thought, feeling momentarily disappointed at the lack of any surprising or interesting finds on a level below the far more pronounced disappointment of finding neither Phil nor the supposed intruder. With the house fully swept, Clark McCarthy shook his head. How? Was all he could wonder. He would soon realize that while the answer was only too close, the real question was where.